I'm an alcoholic and my name's Mike. I'd like to remind everybody we have special needs seating sections for those who have some way of handicap. I think they're in the back corner over here. Over here. Right over here. Can we have a moment of silence in gratitude for AA, followed by the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And our first speaker this morning, and let me see if I can get this right, is Mimi from Aruba.
Hello. Good morning. My name is Ismina. I'm an alcoholic from Aruba. I live in Aruba for 16 years now. It was a geographical escape from Germany because they didn't have enough rum in Germany. And I drank for 3 years, lots of rum in Aruba. I came to open the bar. Oh, sorry, I thought it was loud enough. I came to open the bar in Aruba, and I think that's every alcoholic's dream, to open their own bar. I wanted to open a bar, sit, you know, make cocktails, colorful ones, umbrellas, straws, and have a lot of fun with the guests and drink with them, and that was the idea of my life in Aruba. And so many times, until then, my life was always predictable because I was drinking, and I knew that wherever I was going to drink, and I was going to have blackouts and be miserable and unhappy. And so I came to Aruba, and the story continued. But the disappointing part was that nobody wanted to come and drink at my bar. It was a time in Aruba where it was not fashionable yet to have fancy bars and fancy cocktails, even though I thought it was a Caribbean island and everybody in Caribbean islands drinks and dances, and it was just not like that. It was before its time. I was too early, because now it's like that, now that I'm not drinking anymore. And everybody came to eat to the restaurant, because there was a little kitchen, and I had said that if people want to eat something, I cook it, and I never cooked in my life before. And I thought that I can cook 4 or 5 dishes every night when people get hungry between drinking, because I remember that I get hungry between drinking. Actually, I used to eat a lot of garbage between drinking because I didn't have any control over what I was eating when I was drinking. And everybody came to eat instead of to drink, so I ended up in the kitchen from 7 in the morning to 2 o'clock at night, and it was a nightmare, really was. And it took 9 months into living in Aruba that I met the love of my life, and he supported me a lot in being able to do the work that I had to do, cooking. And I didn't speak the language of the people in Aruba that were in the workforce, which was Spanish, and I had to learn Spanish and so get some help to not be working alone in the kitchen. But while I was working alone in the kitchen, I made mostly, you know, the food for myself, was because I'm vegetarian. I eat yogurt with bananas and brown rum in it, and I would eat, mix everything with alcohol, so that it was more fun for me to be cooking all day long in the kitchen. And my food was also tasting better when I was under the influence of alcohol, and I was also cooking faster. And still I was feeling really horrible about myself and never allowed anyone, you know, to see me. And they would say, come, let the cook come out, we want to see the cook, we want to say thank you. And I said, I'm not coming out of the kitchen. You know, if they want to see me, they have to come and come into the kitchen. So those are the people that many years ago I still remember are the ones that came into the kitchen, and they brought me drinks bought my own drinks that I made then for myself. And I was talking about the love of my life, the man that I met, because at one point he had said, maybe I have come into your life to show you the way to AA, to find out about the program. And I said, I really don't want you to be the one, I don't want you to be in my life just to show me about AA. But, you know, the first years of my recovery, I didn't want him to be in this role. I just wanted to maybe just find out about AA on my own. I did go to meetings on my own in the beginning because I didn't want to let him know that I was an alcoholic. And he also didn't think I was an alcoholic because he never saw me drink, because I was all day cooking in my kitchen, and when I was out of the kitchen, I didn't drink in front of him. Also, I was in a phase that I met him that I was cutting down. I tried to cut down drinking, and I thought that eventually I would cut it out completely. And I realized that cutting down drinking, you know, it doesn't work. It was hard to realize that I'm an alcoholic because I thought that all my life's misery came from me just feeling miserable about myself, my family. You know, I hated everybody in my family. And I hated everything about Germany. And I thought this geographical escape coming to Aruba would change my life and change everything, and it didn't. It didn't until 3 years later, until I found out about Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was the most eye-opening, wonderful experience I think that I ever had in my life, that I came into my first meeting, which was full of men, Aruban men. Actually, I went to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting because we didn't have AA meetings in Aruba at the time, and there were only men in there, and I said, I'm not here in this meeting because I have a problem with drugs, I have a problem with alcohol, and I'm not sure if I belong here because there are only men in this meeting. And they said to me that it doesn't matter why I'm here, I'm welcome, and they don't mind that I'm the only woman in the meeting either. So I kept coming, and this was the first time in my life ever that I felt belonging to anything, because I thought that I would feel belonging when I drink. I did have a sense of belonging being drunk and hanging out at bars until after midnight and have all those friends that drink with me and that I met, and we would invite each other for like rows and rows of drinks, 8-10 glasses. That's what people do when they drink. And I remember the first thing I ever learned in the Aruban language was, if I get drunk, it's your fault. And then anyway, this is how I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and from then on my life changed. You know, I do really don't like to remember where I'm coming from, because I didn't like my life at all before I came into AA. I always thought that I will never get older than 30, I'll die or I kill myself, because life wasn't worth living the way it was. And so I had made it to age 31, I was still alive, and I had found Alcoholics Anonymous, and from then on really, yeah, my life started to become a wonderful life, and it has been amazing ever since. And this meeting is about one day at a time, and I one day at a time has really been one of the slogans of the program that has carried me most through difficult times. You know, every day that I had self-doubts of if I can handle everything I have to handle for one day, or how do I get through a year or a month of struggle of life and problems and tax problems and drinking problems and problems with friends and with employees and with dogs and parents, brothers and sisters who are still using drugs. And I can only get through anything that happens in my life by one day at a time. I also could not imagine, like everybody who comes into Alcoholics Anonymous, I think that I cannot drink anymore for the rest of my life. And you don't have to drink just for today. It really was such bullshit for me in the beginning, because as a non-alcoholic, how can I possibly think that I have to just not drink for today if I know that I cannot drink for the rest of my life? And I needed to go to a lot of meetings and do a lot of one day at a time to understand that this is the only thing that works. It is, you know, I believe that AA was a brainwash when I came there because I had never gone, I was never part of any religion in my life, and because of the brainwash thing. And Alcoholics Anonymous, now today I know, of course, it is not a brainwash program, but it did wash my brain because it needed washing. And today I can really see clear, and I can see when I have a problem, I know what I have to do. I was going to another meeting this morning, and you know, it was about first things first, and I know that I need to go. There are mornings when I have to think, what is the first thing that I have to do for today? And in some days, it's going to a meeting. I mean, it really, if I wake up, my head doesn't, you know, fit on straight in my body, and I am really, I can pray, I can read meditation books, I can talk to people, I still don't feel right. I have to go to a meeting. And meetings are what have saved my life in Aruba through all difficult times. And also, the good times that I thought I didn't need a meeting, and I would go to a meeting and I would feel wonderful afterwards. Today, I was not originally going to be the speaker at this meeting. My husband was, because he also spoke at the Minneapolis meeting in the year 2000. He's a great speaker. And he knew in February that he was going to die, and he was asking if I could not replace him in case that he was not going to make it until this day today. And I remember how I was screaming and saying, no, I don't want to replace you. But I do have to, and I feel very honored, because he is definitely the reason why I am in Alcoholics Anonymous, because he is the one that showed me the way. There were meetings in Aruba and alcoholics in Aruba that had a program. There are lots of alcoholics out there still, and you know, most everybody on the island is an alcoholic, I think. But there's not a lot of alcoholics in recovery, and I'm blessed today to be part of the group of recovering alcoholics in Aruba. And when we found out a year and a half ago that he was going to die of cancer, we really had like a big discussion. Maybe we should both start drinking again, you know, because he was going to die anyway, and I was thinking that I'll find a way to stop drinking once he's dead, you know. And we really thought like that for a moment, and it's that kind of thinking that comes to us when situations get, you know, desperate in a way. And I thought, if he really wants to start to drink until the day he dies, because he says, well, now I can drink anyway because I'm going to die, I said, I'm going to drink with him because this is my opportunity to have a drink again, so I don't have to spend a lifetime of not drinking anymore. And I thought, well, if I will not be able to stop afterwards, so be it, you know, then I'm just going to die too, everything will be fine, I'll be happy, I don't have to worry about how I'm going to continue my life without him. And we had a lot of, it really was like a half an hour of discussion between us when we found out about how fatal the disease was. And we both decided, and he especially said, you know, I have been sober now for 16 years and I really don't want to die drunk. I want to die sober. And so we went back to Aruba from Florida, and we went to meetings, and we did a lot of meetings like we usually did every week. And he always shared in meetings that AA has taught him how to live, and AA has taught him how to die. And it has taught all of us in the group, it has given all of us in the group enormous strength how to deal, you know, under difficult circumstances. Because when I ever thought, you know, that I had problems with taxes or these problems or that problem, or someone came to a meeting and said, I have such terrible back pain, I can hardly move, I said, look, you have back pain, but you're not dying, are you? And I never saw anything in life, you know, when I have to measure how bad something really is, then normally I never have to think it's bad, because everything was worse before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't have any outlook upon life. That life was really bad. And I didn't want to live in the first place, but now I was alive. I had learned how to live, how to be a responsible person, how to how to live a good life and a good example. And I believe that, you know, the serenity that I have learned in this program is so unmeasurable, because I have been a basket case screaming maniac before I came into the program, and people that know me today, they can't, people that know me from before, when they see me today, they cannot believe that it's the same person that they're seeing. And so we then decided that we are not going to start drinking over my husband dying, and we both spent a year and 2 months of celebrating the life that he had been given, because the doctors told him he would die in 3 months, which would have been a reasonable time to keep drinking, but he really did live a year and 2 months after the prognosis. And this was, I think, you know, living one day at a time never has been more important for me than in this year and 2 months. Because every day I lived one day at a time. I never thought about the future. I never thought about myself being alone. I didn't know that I was going to be here in Minneapolis speaking. I didn't know that in the beginning. I only knew, like, since the month of February. But the program has this one day at a time slogan, has so incredibly, you know, helped me in my life to stay sane, because I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous to stay sane. The moment I, you know, my old thinking comes true, I am this close to a drink and I don't know if I'm not going to take it. And I go to meetings because I need to stay sane. My brain is sometimes very close to doing, you know, make unlogical decisions, and I need to stay sane. So one day at a time, I lived one day at a time taking care of my husband while he was dying. I go to meetings, I hear him share, I hear the incredible strength of surviving also one day at a time, surviving the pain and the, you know, the fear. The fear of the disease and the fear of dying, and overcoming the fear of dying. For me, overcoming the fear of being with a dead person at some point, because I've never been with anyone dead before in my life. It has been an enormous experience. You know, when my husband suggested to the convention management that I have maybe a good message to share, I didn't think I did, and I'm not sure I'm doing now, because I'm at this moment, and I also think I'm not going to stand in front of you and talk about how I'm feeling today, but I'm feeling amazed about the words that are coming out of my mouth, because I was not planning to say what I'm speaking about now. I had my whole speech set up completely different. It was full of jokes, making everybody laugh, you know, and obviously some people are still laughing because but, you know, my husband's name is Roger, and I came to Toronto, and everything I see is Rogers, Rogers Stadium, Rogers Telephone, Rogers Television. I said, I don't know why he didn't come here to see that this whole city is about him. And now this whole city is full of his name, even though he is not here, and this is also one of those amazing things. I mean, I didn't have any idea that Toronto was all about Roger. And now here I am replacing him, and know that later I go to the Rogers Stadium for the flag rehearsal, because my sponsee, who came with me from Aruba, is going to carry the flag of Aruba tonight at the opening ceremony. And I have lots of friends in the audience, and I have one friend also coming from Aruba sitting in the audience, and lots of people who have ever been in Aruba here today in this room, who came to meetings in Aruba, even one that I picked up to come to a meeting in Aruba just a while ago, and he brought me croissant, and I never eat anything in AA meetings because I don't believe in eating and drinking in meetings. But here he was, you know, with Dunkin' Donuts loaded for his meeting supply. So here's the room full of people who have been in Aruba before, and some of them come because they know me. Many of them know Roger at times when he was still, you know, alive and strong, and we didn't have any suspicion of his death. And I'm really grateful I'm speaking today because it's supposed to be kind of a memorial speech. For me, it will be, because if I get the tape of this day today and my fellow speaker sitting here with me, then I know that this is like 4 months after his death that I'm here and celebrating one alcoholic, but, you know, really representing everyone in AA, everyone who's sick and everybody who's dying, and me representing everyone to demonstrate that life goes on after death, you know, even after other people's deaths, and that I'm amazed really how my life continues. And I don't have to cry every day. I cry very rarely. I just do now because I'm talking about it. But life really goes on, even though I was so worried about it before that it might not. I didn't know how I was going to handle it because I lived one day at a time and I didn't waste any time thinking how tomorrow was going to be. So I have been living one day at a time ever since that diagnosis in January. And since he died, I'm living one day at a time. And I'm going to continue doing it like this. And I got up this morning really worried about my speaking here, and I took it one day at a time, and I said, I just have one day today, go to this convention, I'm going to listen to a few other people before I speak myself, and one day at a time goes on and on in my life, one day after the other day, and I am not going to worry about, you know, it has proven to me that the past 4 months living like this has made it possible for me to live a rather cheerful life. I can have fun with my dogs, with friends that I see. I can laugh. The moment somebody mentions my husband's name, I have tears and I cry, and then it goes away again. And so life continues. I mean, life, something that I never cared about before I came into AA. I didn't care about life. I really didn't want to be in this earth. Has become such an amazing thing. And life is nothing today that I worry about, because I know that I'm, unfortunately, sometimes I think I'm healthy and I'm going to live a long time, but whatever is going to happen, I am going to be able to deal with anything that comes up one day at a time. Thank you.
Now I'd like to introduce Frank from Nova Scotia.
Good morning, friends. My name is Frank, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm not an upfront person, so anyway, I'm here. I was once told, if I'm up front, to try and make other people equally as embarrassed as I am right here now. So, as I've said times before, what I've done today, I've visually undressed all the ladies in the audience. And a message for the alcoholic, or for the agnostic, rather, and the atheist, if you have a similar vision, I'm quite sure that you will now say that only God could have created such beauty. But anyway, my first introduction to AA was in a little 1/8 horsepower town called, that is comparing with New Glasgow, or comparing with Toronto, a little place called New Glasgow, down in Nova Scotia. And it was quite accidental, actually. An old gent who seemed to feel that I needed AA asked me to drive him to New Glasgow, which I did quite graciously. Anyway, the meeting was in a little barber shop. And as I remember it, these guys were all talking about some guy called God. And I thought, this, my gosh, what foolishness. But anyway, that went on and on. And finally, I came to the end of the meeting, and I drove the old guy home. Anyway, he said to me, what did you think of it? And I said, that's fine for you old fellas, but I don't need anything like that. So that was okay. At that meeting, incidentally, there was a guy that I had done some drinking with, and I knew that his drinking was uncontrollable. So that was okay, too. Anyway, when I, on the way home, as I say, the old fella asked me what I thought of it, and I said it was okay for you old fellas. But later on, I was at a party where this fellow who had learned controlled drinking was drinking, and quite controllably. So he had graduated. So I thought, well, that's great. Anyway, sometime later than that, I don't know how long, maybe 6 months, maybe a year, I moved to Halifax. And there I was having quite a problem with drinking. Sure as hell couldn't control it. So I thought, well, by gosh, Bobby learned how to control his drinking. The only thing that I didn't know was that Bobby graduated many times before he died. So anyway, I went into Halifax. And I called AA anyway. A guy came to see me. And he said, don't drink any more today, and I'll call around to see you this evening. Which he did. And he took me to an AA meeting. Now, my purpose in going to that meeting was not to stop drinking. It was only to learn how to drink controllably. So, anyway, I got there, and they did tell me, I remember, if you don't get AA, but you keep coming to meetings, it'll eventually get you. And that's exactly, I think, what happened. Is that actually, I hated, I think, everybody on earth. As I say, I was, I believe I was an atheist. The only God that I knew was a God of hate. And I could hate pretty well. I think I had a master's degree in it. And you know something? They told me that there was only one person that I could change. And I found that out to be a damn lie. Because all these sons of bitches, pardon my English, were pretty miserable people. And I stayed sober, and it's a funny thing, they all turned out to be pretty darn nice people. So I changed them. Anyway, I went on from there, and incidentally, the group I belonged to was the original EDI group in Halifax, Nova Scotia. At that particular time, I was the youngest, and I was given the job, if you'll pardon my English again, of being hut slut. And I don't, whether you know what that is or not, you swept floors, washed dishes, answered the phone, hopefully kept your ears open, and so on. And you know what's the funny thing? As smart as I was, I've never graduated. I've never gone above Hutzlot. So, anyway, I try my darndest not to live in the past, except for the more pleasant things. And you know, I've had a heck of a good life. I eventually learned not to hate people. I think I've learned pretty well how not to drink. That is for me. I am no longer an atheist. I have a God of love. How else would I put it? Anyway, I've learned to pray. I've learned to talk to my God. And I've learned a little bit about the 12 steps. Certainly have not completed them. I've heard so many people say, well, I've completed this step, I've completed that step, and so on. I haven't completed any of them because my life is still unmanageable. I'm quite convinced I'm powerless over alcohol. So that part of it, I guess I've accomplished. I'm quite sure that I have accepted God without question. I think I've made, I don't think I've ever sat down and worked the fourth steps as it suggested. But I think I've made restitution to all the people that I've harmed. If I haven't, then it's too darn late now. But I've had a good life. And I try to remember the better things that have happened in my life. Something happened to me since I've been here in Toronto. A son of a friend of mine came to Toronto in AA. And that friend, that is, this young fellow's father, I think perhaps contributed one of the biggest things in my life, in that I used to do a lot of scuba diving. And his father used to come up to Nova Scotia and dive with me. And I took him to a very remote place, about 30 miles south of Yarmouth, a little place called Seal Island, where we did some diving. And the lady, the only inhabitant of the island, was very kind to us. She let us live in the little fish shacks on the island. But she wouldn't take any money for it. So anyway, my friend, who happened to be from Pennsylvania, called me one day after he got back to Pennsylvania, and he said, how would you do you think Mrs. Hamilton would like to have electricity in her home? And I said, I think she'd have to be out of her mind if she didn't. Well, he said, well, my company, he said, makes all kinds of electrical equipment, batteries, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought maybe the company would likely donate the stuff if we came up and put up a windmill generator to charge the batteries and wired her house and so on. And no, I said, that sounds pretty good. He said, why don't you go down and see her? So I did that. I went down to see Mrs. Hamilton, and I told her about it. Oh, she said, I think that'd be great. She said, I'd love to have electricity. But she said, I think I can get power from the lighthouse. So I called my friend. He said, well, find out. Oh, I did. I called the Department of Transport. And the party to whom I spoke said, my golly, I think that's wonderful. She can have all the power she can burn. He said, the work that lady has done for us through the years has made our work a heck of a lot easier. And anyway, I called Sharkey back, and I told him. And he said, well, anyway, he shipped all the stuff up to me. And they arrived in the spring or in the summer with electricians, et cetera, et cetera. I took them down to the island. They wired the house. They ran the wires to the lighthouse through the woods. They called the Department of Transport. Department of Transport came down, made the final connection. We had a party for the old lady. Everyone brought her an electrical gift. And if you could have seen that old lady's face when she threw the switch and all the lights in her house came on, it was really wonderful, you know. And Sharkey had given her a two-way radio, showed her how to work it. And in the meantime, of course, she had gotten herself a fridge freezer. So she called a fisherman and wanted to know if the next time he came out to the island, if he would bring her a tub of ice cream. Anyway, I think that was one of the nicest things that happened to me in my sobriety, to have been a small part of it. And anyway, I have learned pretty much, I think, in my lifetime to live a day at a time. To say, I don't live yesterday, really, except for the nicer things. But like the rest of you, as far as my drinking was concerned, it was uncontrolled. And that's, I think, as far as I need to go with regards to it. But anyway, these... As I say, I've lived my life a day at a time. I still live my life a day at a time. I've heard many people say, oh, I have a year's sobriety. I have 5 years sobriety. I have 10 years sobriety, whatever. Frankly speaking, I never had a year's sobriety or 10 years sobriety. I've had my sobriety a day at a time. And I think to this point, as of today, I've had 20,697 days, consecutive days, that is, of sobriety, and I hopefully the rest of my life I'll have continued sobriety at a day at a time. Thank you very much. Wish you all another 24.
And our last speaker will be Irene, New York.
Yeah. I'm going to stand on my tiptoes, Rex. I'm Irene, I'm an alcoholic. Hi, gang, aren't you glad to be here? Yeah! Well, I just told you who I was and what I am. And one day at a time, I had been given an opportunity to come to be the representative in Central New York for corrections. And we have absolutely the best area in Central New York. That's 47 in the whole wide world. I know we got some New Yorkers here. As you can tell, I am a Southern New Yorker, okay? I moved to New York a couple of years ago, and I really enjoyed it. And what really made my move so easy, and I have moved in many places in sobriety, is that I found AA, and I jumped right in. I said, hey, you haven't had a GSR for a while? I'll be a GSR. I've done that before. And you know, you get to meet the best people in the whole world when you're in service. It's fantastic. If you haven't tried it, I suggest it. I get sober back in 81 in Atlanta, Georgia, the home of party. Hotlanta. I actually, when I walked in, this gentleman right here spoke to me, and I said, oh boy, I know I'm home now, because I was born and raised in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I loved it. But I love it wherever I am today because I'm sober, and that's really what counts. And without sobriety, I wouldn't know where I was. I was talking to somebody about being in Aruba. Well, guess what? It was before I got sober. And I can remember getting drunk on that rum, and it is not like U.S. rum, let me tell you. And so I don't remember a whole lot of things about it, other than I know I was there. Today I have a really great guy in my life. And he's in sobriety also. He keeps reminding me to live one day at a time, you know? And I'm very fortunate to have met him. He's all the fun and I'm all the seriousness. Oh yeah, I know. You just get in discussion with me, you'll get bored to death and walk away. But I love this program so much. Actually, I want to say a big thank you to all of the professionals that help us in AA, because my sobriety came through working with my professional therapist. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I knew my mother was, and I knew how ugly that was. I knew how hard it was to step over her when a boy picked me up. She was passed out on the floor, and I'd go on those first few dates. But I didn't know any more about alcoholism than that. That's all I knew. And one day at a time, my therapist just kind of led me down the road. And lo and behold, when I was ready, he knew it. Not just because he was a professional and trained to do that. That man was the son of two recovering parents. And was my higher power working? Yeah. Right? I was right where I was supposed to be. And the first introduction I had to One Day at a Time and Alcoholics Anonymous was in a treatment program. And they brought in a big book. It's the old blue one, folks. And they brought in the 12 and 12, and they gave it to me. And they had a little black book. And on the cover, it said One Day at a Time. It was a meditation book. Well, being newly sober and knowing all this good stuff, you know what I said to him? I said, well, if it's one day at a time, why did you give me 365 pages? I just need one page today, thank you. Yeah, they knew that they were in for it then. So that was my introduction and my cynicism about One Day at a Time. And where it went from there was this. I'll stay sober till I get out of this place. And we'll see then. We'll see then what happens. And I got out of that place. And first thing I did was hit the meeting at noontime. And so I made a decision. I'll show them all. I'll stay sober for 3 months. Yeah, I'll do it just to spite them. And so I stayed sober 3 months. Then all of a sudden I thought, hey, I could do this for a whole year. Wouldn't that be a hoot, you know? A whole year of this? Whoa. And then, as I went along one day at a time, I heard the old-timers talk. Man, I don't ever want to be that sober. And one day at a time, I've become one of those long-timers in this program. So if you don't want to hear me talk, there's a door over there, and I don't mind. But if I hadn't listened, I wouldn't know where I am today. It's been super terrific. There's another person that is very important to my sobriety when I came in, and that's my first sponsor. I didn't have to pick her. She picked me. Okay? And that was a blessed relief, because Boy, I knew you guys were screwed up in the head, and I didn't want to pick any of you. And so she picked me. She was a very good sponsor for me because she guided me. She didn't direct me. She didn't tell me to read so many pages. She didn't tell me to do anything. But when I picked up that phone and called, and one day I picked it up, and I called her, I don't know what's wrong with me, but there's something wrong, and I just can't tell you what it is. She says, calm down, Irene. Don't drink today. Just don't drink today. You're going through an alcoholic panic. We do it all the time. I said, really? She said, yeah, you're just fine. You're right where you're supposed to be. I said, oh, thanks. Hung up the phone, you know. Enlightenment, folks. You can have an alcoholic panic and live through it. That's one day at a time. I remember calling her once and telling her about my drunk dreams. Did y'all have those drunk dreams when you first got sober? Oh, boy. Wake up in the middle of the night and you know that you have been drunk and that you passed out and you just can't believe you did it without knowing it. And you're breathing in your hand. You're breathing in your pillow and you're wondering, did I drink last night? So when I called her about that, she said, you're all right, Irene. Just don't drink today. It was a dream. We all do that. You know, I just could not get out of being the garden variety drunk. I was not special, and I thought I was. I just knew I was a special drunk. Because after all, I was one of those drunks that was a periodic drunk. You know, but my periods of drinking made up for any time that I wasn't drinking. Because I was a very violent, very vocal drunk. And I'm sure that every bouncer and every person that I insulted in the Atlanta bars is so glad I'm sober today and out of their life. But anyway, so I had those drinking dreams and all those things we go through, but my sponsor took me through the first 9 steps. She sort of advised me. You know, I said, what the heck is this and what does that mean? And, you know, so she got me through the first 9 steps. And then she picked up a pamphlet and on the back it says, I am responsible. And she says, you know what? You're ready now. You're responsible for the rest of your life. One day at a time. And this is the purpose of your sobriety, is to help another drunk. And you just put steps 10, 11, and 12 to work every day. Every day that you live sober, and you'll know gratitude, and you'll know the love of this program. So that was my first introduction to, why in the heck am I here? Because I didn't know. I just knew that I needed to get out of that misery I was in. I was miserable. And it's funny because I know that I surrendered when I walked into my therapist's office on that Saturday morning after I kept him up all night long, screaming into the phone in a drunken rage. And he said to me, he said, Irene, I can put you in a psych unit for a little while and they can help you out, or I can put you in the hospital for 3 or 4 days. What do you think you need? I said, I've been coming here for 2 years. Yeah, no. I don't know what I need. I had given up. I had given up my way of living at that moment because I asked his help. And that wasn't me. That was my higher power. So anyway, I once had this dream and I never told my sponsor about it. I don't know if she's alive today. But this dream was, you know how you hear people say, I can't safely drink again? I know I can't safely drink again. Well, I don't know that, folks. I really don't know what tomorrow holds. I believe that's probably true. So I had this idea that I would have my next drink sitting in front of my sponsor. And in this dream, I called her. And I says, come on over. I'm about to drink and you've got to help me. Well, of course, being a good sponsor, you know what she told me in my dream? She says, it'll be an hour or so. I thought, nah, can you believe this? I want to get drunk and this woman doesn't even care. She's not going to rush right to my feet, you know? So anyway, that was the way my dream went. And she was sitting there, and in her grandest moment of trying to keep me sober, I whipped out my bottle of scotch and started to pour it in the glass, and the dream ended. That dream's important to me because about a week before that, I had come home. I was at the Atlanta College Bard at the time. And I'd come home from class about 3 o'clock in the afternoon and sat down on the floor. And I said, I'm really over this sobriety crap. And I was married to a good drinking buddy, okay? A very good drinking buddy. There was more than enough booze in my house. I opened the cupboards to it. Oh, it was longer than this. Our bar was stocked with alcohol. And I sat down and I said, I'm going to have a drink now. I've done this long enough. Each bottle I pulled out, each bottle I uncapped, each bottle I smelled and recapped it. When it got all through, I looked and there's not any more. And I'm looking around beside me. And you know what? I looked like one of my kids in a playpen with all my toys, and I wasn't happy. I thought, you're the most foolish thing at 40 years old that anybody's ever seen. I put each one of those bottles back. I didn't take a drink. I didn't tell anyone. But I realized that day I made a choice. I chose not to drink. And for that, I'm very grateful. So, I never told her that, but I know that my dream about inviting her over to watch me drink went right back to my own actions. You know, so I was responsible for what happens in my life. And another really great thing happened to me when I was 3 months sober. My husband was awarded an all-expense-paid trip. You will never guess. We went to the silver anniversary of the Daytona 500 stock car races. Not a party in town, folks. I'm 3 months sober, and my sponsor didn't say, you can't go. She says, you need to be ready to go. So I took my phone numbers, hers, and 3 or 4 other people I trusted in my big book, and my meditation book. That kept me on the right track, along with the big book. So we get there, and of course, I'm hungry, angry, lonely, and tired by 5 o'clock in the afternoon because we had that airline food in the morning. I was with a drinking partner, and he was drinking with all of his suppliers. And I'm sitting there with no lunch, and I'm lonely for the folks back, those stinking people back in those AA rooms back in Atlanta. Boy, did I want to be home at that moment. Anyway, this went on during the day. And so when we got back to this condo, we were given no phones, folks. And I didn't have a mobile phone at the time. No phone. Now what do you do? So as we left to go to dinner, and I knew there'd be more drinking, but at least there'd be food, and I would be happy. At least I could stop the hunger. So we went to dinner, and I looked, and on the way out of the parking lot, there was a payphone, and I said, oh, I'm saved again. God grant me. And so then when we came back, I tried all those phone numbers. Nobody answered. Nobody answered. Here I am in trouble again. And these fools don't know to answer their phone. So what did I do? Next best thing, I was tired. I knew where the bed was. I got in it. That was my experience with hope. That was my experience with holding on for a day, one day at a time. Got up the next day, and I went to that payphone again, and I called all those numbers. Wasn't anybody there. They weren't answering. Now I wasn't worried about how important I was. I was worried about how important they were. So I got hold of the phone book, and I found the answering service number. Now, there is probably an operator still in Daytona that is wondering who I am. Because I got her on the phone, and all she does is answer the call and take, you know, your number and find somebody to call you back. No, she wasn't getting off that phone with me. I've got news for you. I was about to take a drink, and I need somebody to talk to. And I said, lady, don't you hang this phone up. I said, I'm 3 months sober. I'm here at the Daytona 500. They just gave us a basket with champagne and bourbon in it. I can't wait for you to have somebody call me. I don't have the answer, lady. I'm not in AA. I just answered the phone. I said, I don't care. You're going to listen to me. She did. She did. But in the meantime, she found out that I couldn't receive a call back to the payphone. So she gave me whatever number, and I called that number. And there was a person that answered that phone. And I bless all of you that are on the other end of that line, because that saved my life that day. I knew that night I was going to a meeting. I knew that night I'd have access to a car, and I'd be all right. So I took my big book, and I went out and sat on the beach. And I sat there and read that big book, and it came to me. I wasn't looking for anything special in there, just occupying my brain, what little I had left of it. But I found a God of my understanding. I sat on that beach and I realized I'm never alone as long as I have a power greater than myself, who I call my Creator today, in my heart, in my soul, in my mind. So on that day, that one day, I learned that I had a higher power to rely on. Today I call my Creator my co-pilot, because I've done a lot of traveling in sobriety and lived a lot of places. And I get out there on the road and I need that co-pilot. So today my co-pilot came from Daytona Beach, Florida, from being hungry, angry, lonely, tired, from an answering service and being able to walk into a room that night and say, thank God I'm here. I was over being lonely, because you know what? No matter where I'm sober, where I go to a meeting, the message of hope does not change. Only y'all's accent changes. That's all it is. But I've also learned one day at a time, my sobriety is important to me. It's number one. But my home group's message is more important than I am. And my home group is but a small, small piece of a worldwide responsibility to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous wherever we go and to live those principles. No matter how difficult, and it's wonderful today that we can cry, we can laugh, we can go through death, and we can get up and we can share it. And we can all know what that means. All of us can know that. So it's amazing, all these dreams I've told you about. Well, you know, one day at a time, I never dreamed I did an international convention. Because I went to conventions with my ex-husband, and I hated him. Because you started out drinking everywhere. And I tried to stay sober everywhere. I mixed orange juice. I put ginger ale in my wine. I mean, I was not a 24-hour-a-day drinker, folks. I got drunk. And I could not afford to get drunk because I lost my rage. I had a rage in me when I was drinking. And I couldn't do that to customers and suppliers. So I hated conventions. And I said, when I get sober, I am not going to any conventions. You know, predictions, is that one day at a time? No. So here I am today, and I am very grateful. I threw my name in the hat, and it was pulled out. First Hippies Area Assembly. And I just sat there. I didn't know whether to stand up or run out of the room. I thought, now, boy, you did it this time, didn't you? I opened your big mouth again, which is quite frequently what happens. But I'm amazed today to see everyone and to feel a part of it. It's just the message of hope. That's all it is, one day at a time. I've learned not to figure out my plans, the end of them. My plans today are to keep breathing for today. Make plans for tomorrow, next year, next month, that's fine. But if I get up that morning and it isn't working, guess what? I get to make a different decision. I get anxious about things. We rode the ferry over here, folks. We rode the fast ferry from Rochester, New York to Toronto. Try to stay in one day at a time. They don't know when it's coming. They canceled the first launch date. You know, and then they keep having these folks on the news. Now, you try to stay in that day. You know, I'm holding not even a ticket. They didn't give us a ticket. They said you can pay for it when you get ready to get on the boat. That's interesting. I wonder if the boat's going to leave the dock. So, but anyway, one day at a time, I just stayed right there. And I think about the year that I was born was 1941. Don't do the math, folks. It's too old to worry about. But in the year 1941, they were getting ready to print the second edition or the second printing of the big book. So they already knew I was coming. Okay? They knew I'd need one of those books. In 1941, the first meeting was held in San Quentin Prison. And we're honoring the warden with the 20 millionth book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was born in that year, so I knew they had a seat for me. I just knew they had a seat for me. And it's irony, but it's serendipity, and it's the thing that was supposed to happen. I'm involved with corrections. And here I stand. None of this, folks, would I have predicted ever. But when I just did it one day at a time, here I am. And it's glorious. One of the things they tell you, a trick I thought about one day at a time, I really didn't like one day at a time when I came in. You people did not have my life, so it didn't matter. You could do that, la la la. You know, you've had lobotomies. But anyway, I after staying sober a little while, I thought of my life as a deck of cards. Nice. Get the whole 52 of them in my hand. Each day I could take one and turn it over. It was all new. It was different. Rub it between my hands. I could bend it. Look at the back. Look at the sideways. It's the way life is. Put it down that night when I went to bed. Woke up the next day. Ooh, I get a new one today. That's how I became interested in living one day at a time, because it is, it's an adventure. And I'm so glad that you've all been here with me to share it. Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank all you speakers. I really enjoyed being here today, and thank them again. And you know, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous suggests that we continue on a daily basis, you know, to ask for God's guidance. And, you know, it says we have a daily reprieve contingent upon our spiritual maintenance. And you people keep on doing that, because I need you in my life. Let's close this meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.